Teresa Gloriano from King's College London, and she will tell us about cosmological implications of quantum gravity proposals.
Well, thank you. First of all, let me thank Nidle and Stefan for the invitation. It's really always a pleasure to be here. So I will discuss about cosmological implications actually of two quantum gravity proposals. And my point of view is, comes from cosmology. So I will tell you what I mean. I will not try to sell one approach more than another. I will try to use them. So what is the motivation? So you know that the model that currently we all use is this lambda CDA model, which is a phenomenological model that has been built upon Einstein's theory of classical relativity with two components that are put by hand, a lambda positive and a cold dark matter component in order to fit the data. And of course it is solved in a particular kind of manifold, which is homogeneous isotropic background. Certainly, this model is very successful because it's constructed to be successful. It's a phenomenological model. So the best that you can do is you can show consistency of that model with the data, not proof. And there is a number of open questions, of course. As we heard these days, the issue of the initial singularity, the point that still dark matter remains undetected, we have no clue what dark energy is, despite many, many papers on inflation, which basically is due to a kind of scalar field with a fine-tuned potential, inflation remains a paradigm in search of a theory. And it might indeed be the case that what we are missing is at a very early scales, at very high energy scales, in other words, we should stop thinking that the background geometry, it is described by Einstein's theory and in a continuous background. So we need to take some corrections. We need to solve this new theory in a different kind of background. And then it might be that some of these issues can be resolved. So quantum gravity, it's needed. And then what we also say is that cosmology can offer, I mean, the best, if not the only way, in order to test various quantum gravity proposals. Thank you. Now, usually the quantum gravity approaches, I usually somehow classify them into these two approaches. In other words, the top-down one and the bottom-up. The top-down, you might have a string and brains and extra dimension kind of models, or a non-perturbative variant to quantum gravity, Wheeler-DeWitt, loop quantum gravity, causal dynamical triangulation, causal sets, group field theory. And then in the bottom-up approach, as far as I know, it's no commutative geometry, either as a spectral geometry or as a field theory. And another way is to take asymptotic safety. So we have heard the previous days from Robert how you can have a model with brains or a string gas scenario that can give you a kind of early accelerated expansion and a bound scenario. We've heard from the talks by Abai and by Martin about loop quantum gravity that leads to the mini superspace loop quantum cosmology approach. Now, we've heard how group field theory can give you this GFT condensate cosmology by talk by Ed. And as well, I will tell you that non-commutative field theory can as well show an early era of accelerated expansion with a graceful exit and a bouncing scenario. So what I will try to do in the rest of my talk, in a kind of phenomenological approach, I'm going to tell you how we have used group field theory condensate cosmology in order to show that we have a bouncing solution and in order to show that we have an early era of accelerated expansion. And not only that, at the end of the day, we can give a prescription for the group field theory condensate kind of model, how you should glue this kind of quantum space if you want to get macroscopically the space on which we live. So here, the basic idea is that you are going to construct a kind of quantum geometry theory. You take the Hilbert space and you are going to look for states which macroscopically they could be seen like homogeneous isotropic kind of background. And then the next thing I will do is move to non-commutative field theory. Here I have actually to warn you that myself, as some of you know, have been working for a few years in non-commutative spectral geometry. Non-commutative spectral geometry, as I know, cannot give an answer to these questions, but group field theory, as I will just highlight the work of some colleagues, it can do it. And it's interesting to see the relation at some point. Okay, so let me start with group field theory and group field theory condensate cosmology. So there are several papers that one can find. Here we have a main author and the organizer of this for this approach. So the idea that you have behind from group field theory, that somehow the geometry and the space which you have, there are some kind of emergent quantities that you can get them from what they are called pre-geometric degrees of freedom. So there is some support which comes from different kind of GRUF, GFT models that have been studied with functional renormalization group, and says that you can support the idea of a phase transition that is going to bring you from a symmetric phase to one which the symmetry is broken, you have a condensate, and then at the end of the day you say that what it is the geometry on which we live is nothing else than the condensation of these pre-geometric degrees of freedom, which are your quanta of space. And the spin-off of this approach is group field theory cosmology, which tells you that this condensate is the space-time on which we live, and then you try to get some dynamics, and then you try from there to get some kind of effect equation and to do a mapping with the cosmology that we know from standard GR. So, here there is, whatever I'm going to say, and as far as I know, the majority of things that have ever been done are for a particular model of GFT, and we have to keep that in mind. It's not for any kind of GFT model you have to think. In other words, it is chosen that the local gauge group that you are going to use is the SU2. It is chosen that this building block, these atoms of space, are quantum tetrahedra. And then the theory to be completed, you have to select a field, and as such has been taken a complex scalar field with an axion, and the axion has two components. One, which is the kinetic part, and then you have a sum of polynomials with some weighting factors, which is just the interaction. So for a part of what I'm going to say, will tell you that I just keep only the quadratic term, I freeze the interactions, and then you will see that not only you have to turn on the interactions, but the interactions have to be of a particular form if you want to achieve macroscopically a universe in which we live. So I find this an interesting kind of result at the end. So we want to describe a four-dimensional theory, which means that we take four copies of SU2 on which this complex scalar field phi lives, okay? And now, therefore, this index here, I, is going to take values from 1 to 4 for a four-dimensional space-time, and these group elements can be seen like the parallel transport on the gravitational kind of connection you have on your link. So the first thing to do is to tell you what the group field theory cosmology it is, which we're going to use it later on. I mean, immediately, actually. So the goal that you have here is to go and model homogeneous continuum three geometries and their evolution by the GFT condensate states, and then to write down the dynamics. And everything is based on an assumption, on a conjecture, that indeed there is this kind of phase transition, and then you can have this condensate, and the condensate is made from a kind of non-perturbative vacuum, and this non-perturbative vacuum, you see it, like remember the talk of Ed the other day, that you have the collection on many, n is a big number of this quanta of space that you have, and all of these, they are in the same common ground, which is orthogonal to the non-space state, and the fact that they are in the same common ground that actually confirms that you can take this approach in order to go and study homogeneous and isotropic backgrounds. So the first thing that then you do is you go and you write down your axion. Remember I said that the axion has two parts, the kinetic quadratic term, and then you have a potential part. So let me, for the time being, freeze the potential. In other words, I have no interaction. In other words, this quantum space, I don't glue them. Okay? So let me see what I can get as phenomenological consequences, and then I will see which of these consequences remain valid if I turn on this kind of interaction, and then I'll put some constraints in the way that these interactions could be. So this is the action, as you can see. I crossed the interaction term, and then you go and you write down what's going to be the equation of motion for this condensate. So this field phi that I told you before, this complex field, you split it into two parts, a condensate sigma and a non-condensate. You write down the equation of motion, and the equation of motion is going to take this form here, where phi is a minimally coupled massless scalar field that you have to put by hand in order to have a kind of clock. This is the relational clock that you are going to have. So sigma is the condensate, as I said, phi is the clock, and j is a representation index. So if you do that, and here is the reference, then you can go and split this condensate in two parts, one which is the modulus rho and one which is the phase theta. And then you can rewrite in terms of these two components what will be the equation of motion. And the equation of motion splits into these two parts. Okay? And then you can get these two constant quantities, which there are called, probably abusing a bit the terminology, like a GFT energy. I don't know really what it means as a GFT energy. Nevertheless, that's how it is called, and the concept of Yuan charge.
Sorry, I got lost in the notation. So when you wrote the action, I didn't see, where is time somewhere in there?
The action is schematically written. The time is the phi, you can see. Here, the phi, the derivative of sigma, which
is
the condensate.
Phi is a number, or is
phi is a field which you put in order to be your clock. It's the standard thing that you do in all kind of, LQC, GFT, all these approaches. You don't have a real time, so you don't have proper time. So you put a massless scalar field which is going to play the role of your clock, and that's what I call phi. This is not the complex scalar field of the theory, which I have split it into the sigma, the condensate, and a non-condensate field. Okay? Here, it's even written here what is phi. Phi, it is written here. A minimally coupled massless scalar field introduced to play the role of the clock.
So is phi a function of three variables then? Or is it just a single number?
It could be a single number.
I mean, the GFT field is a function on the configuration space of your elementary building blocks, right? So if you have a tetrahedron, there are some gravitational degrees of freedom which are associated with parallel transports. These are the group elements. And if you have matter fields, you just put them also into this configuration space. So if you want, the tetrahedron carries a label, which is the value of the scalar field. And that's this.
I mean, doesn't depend on space, because there's no space, if that's your question.
It's a label you attach to your states at the microscopic level for each building block, for each tetrahedron. If that makes sense.
So phi is... For this purposes, we can think of it as just a number, varying a real number?
Yes.
And there's a value of sigma for each?
Yes, the sigma depends on the phi. Okay. You want to find the evolution of sigma with respect to the phi.
We could just say it's time then, I guess.
That's what I said. Plays the role of the clock.
We don't have to call it a...
It's a clock. Now, the clock you want to... For me, time is proper time. Since I don't have proper time, I call it clock. You want to call it time,
but
call it time.
In this context, it's some background time, some universal time.
You are looking for a monotonical function with respect to what you can find the evolution of the phi, and we call, of the sigma, and we call it phi, and we say it's a clock. Now, as I said, there's no proper time, so... I don't call it time, but if you want to call it time, you can.
Does it have a kinetic term?
The kinetic term is the first one, you know, the quadratic term. Yeah, in terms of sigma, yes. Is the d sigma, the derivative of sigma with respect to phi, this is the kinetic term that you have.
For sigma, what's the kinetic term for phi?
Sorry?
What's the kinetic
Look, term? The phi does not have kinetic part. So phi is your time, if you want.
So we wouldn't get into trouble if we just read it as t.
Put it at t tilde. If you prefer to put it at t tilde, put it at t tilde. I mean, makes
sense. In what sense is it minimally coupled if you don't have a kinetic term?
But I have the kinetic term there. I don't understand your question. You told me what is sigma. Your question is what is sigma or what is phi? Sigma is my condensate. And phi is something that plays the role of a clock.
Right.
If you want to call it time, call it time.
The only reason I think you're calling it phi is because you call it time and people think of it as proper time.
Because it's proper, that's what I said. Because there's no proper time, I don't call it proper time.
It's
I don't
time. It's some parameter time. Yeah.
Exactly.
That enters in.
Yes, you call it as you wish.
I mean, you're just showing what you're showing here is some kind of effective action.
Yes, yes, yes.
At the level of this mean field.
Yes.
But approximation. Of course, this can be derived from a full action.
If you want, I can show you afterwards the full action. I didn't want to write. I can show it. I have it, but I didn't want to go to that because then we go to another arena that it was discussed 2 days ago.
I was in Vienna.
I can show to you if you want afterwards, but.
But the full theory is supposed to be a theory of gravity coupled to a massless scale. It's basically designed to do that. And then in the cosmological context, the massless scale of course, is an interpretation of a relational clock. But the theory in itself is more general. It can also support non-homogeneous configuration.
I mean, that's a schematic way that I wrote there for the action, just in order to say that there are two terms, and the V is actually the part that has to do with interactions, and if I freeze them, I put it to zero, so it's a schematic way of writing the kinetic and the potential part of the action. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I
can show you.
The notation.
Okay, but I can show you afterwards if you want the full action. And anyway, let us call it time if that people are happier with that. So here is what I said before. So these are the questions that you have and the two conserved quantities. And now you want to find the emergent Friedman equation. So remember before I said that what you want to do is you write down your action, and then from the action you write your equation, and then you try to make an interpretation in terms of the Friedman equation. So you expect to have some kind of extra terms that could appear there. Okay? So then, how does it go? Okay, so then it has been shown actually at first by Stefan, but then we also saw it with Andreas, that very, very soon your condensate is going to reach a state which is characterized by many kind of this quanta of space, all of them at the lowest possible spin. So there is one J that is going to be the dominant one, and therefore I'm going to throw a sum over all the spin representation indices here, and then I'm not going to put J anymore, which means that the equations that I gave you before, for the rho and the theta, which are the phase and the modulus of your condensate, are going to be rewritten into that form. And the question is, how can I write in the large phi limit, phi is my clock or your time if you prefer, how can I cast from there an equation which looks like the Friedman equation when your phi becomes large, which means at the classical limit, okay? And in order to do that, I do not have a metric, so I do not have a scale factor A, but the V is nothing else than the third power of the scale factor, so I can rewrite the Friedman equation in terms of the volume. So that's how the equation looks like, and then you can immediately see, but by using this equation, you can rewrite it into that form where epsilon plays the role of the energy density. I didn't write the rho, which is usually the case, because I have another rho there and people will get confused. So, how this equation that I wrote there can be casted into the standard Friedman equation? In order to do that, there are two ways that you can do. Either
you have a prime and a dot.
Is the derivative with respect to the phi.
And the dot?
And the dot is the d phi over, you know, I try to write this equation, okay, in terms of, so it's the d phi over dt, which does not exist, the t. I try to rewrite that in terms of the volume.
So is t the proper time now, or the conformal time? The dot, its derivative with respect.
Is the proper time if you want to write it for the standard Friedman equation. So there are two ways that you can see the identification between this equation and the standard Friedman equation. Either you can see that you have an effective gravitational constant, so you can call this G, which is nothing else than this quantity, like playing the role of an effective gravitational constant, or, and this is a remark thanks to Martin, or you can see that equation here, where is it? This equation here, rewritten in terms of the three kind of effective fluids that you might have, with an equation of state P equal W rho, 1, 2, or 3. For instance, this one is the standard that you have for the massless scalar field in an FLRW kind of background. And the corresponding acceleration equation can be rewritten here, where you have these correction terms that will come from the GFT kind of correction that you have. Now you can see that each term that comes here, okay, it comes with a power that goes like 1 over V W plus 1. So when you are at big, at small volumes, at early times, what is going to be important, it is this term here. So that's the term, as I will show in a minute, that is going to lead to the bounds. So, in a way that you can see the bounds is the following. Let me go to the approach I said before. Okay, so this equation can be casted into that form. And then there is a value of the time of phi for which V prime over V vanishes. And let me call this value of time capital phi. Then you can immediately see that positive or negative values of your energy far away for G is the Newton's constant, but of course you have the modification, you go at a very small time, so which means at small values of your volume, then you are going to have this effective gravitational constant, and then the bounds appears, and the bounds, it is characterized at a maximum value of the energy density at which the volume is going to pick up the smallest possible value. So that's where the bounds takes place. Now we will discuss afterwards the robustness of this result if you turn on interactions, which means if you have this quantum of space to talk to each other. And as I told you a few minutes ago, the quantity which is responsible for the bounds is actually this contribution from this fluid here. This is actually similarity with a Kapiroti kind of model. So you can see that at early times, when the volume is going to be small, then this becomes the dominant kind of term that is going to lead to these bound solutions. Now, then you are going to ask whether this model can give you an early era of accelerated expansion.
Is Q a constant?
Yes, Q, I define them here. Here, I define them. You get them. Here is the Q. It's a constant quantity, which is called a concept U uncharged that you get from this part of the equation. So this is the equation for your condensate. You split it to the rho, the modulus and the phase, and then this gives you these two equations, which they will give you two constants of motion that they are called GFT energy, don't ask me why, and the Q, which is a concept U uncharged. So this is the Q.
Is rho the modulus?
Rho, here, it's written here. Here,
oh, there it is.
I split the condensate in a phase and a modulus, and I call the phase theta and the modulus rho. Okay? So then goes the question whether you can find an accelerated expansion. So as you all know, this I would just flash it in one transparency. At high energies, we believe that field theory is the correct framework to describe your matter. We want a universe which is homogeneous and isotropic. So usually we take that spin zero particle is going to be the dominant kind of particle. So you have here your energy density and the pressure. You have a slow roll, which means that this kinetic term is negligible in front of the potential. So this gives you this equation of state, the standard equation of state for a scalar field. You plug it in Friedman conservation equation, and you get an accelerated expansion. So that's the standard kind of picture that everybody used to like, many of us dislike, about standard kind of inflation, and of course has a big number of problems. First of all, there are some kind of initial conditions that they cannot be dealt. You have the onset of inflation that remains an open question, to my mind. Until we have a full theory of quantum gravity, this I don't think that would be easily resolved. And of course, there is a big problem of compatibility between particle physics and inflation, if you want the inflaton to be a scalar field. And of course, then there is the approaches of Starobinsky that you have some kind of geometrically driven inflation, which is, could be the idea that we'll have here. If somehow from our corrections we can get an area of accelerated expansion, there can be models where inflation is not needed. So can we find a geometrically driven early accelerated expansion? So before we discuss this idea about the proper time, in standard cosmology there is proper time. So if there is proper time, then you can easily find what you mean by accelerated expansion. So it's the double, the second derivative of the scale factor with respect to the proper time to be positive. Here we do not have a proper time. So I'm trying to write the corresponding equation in the absence of proper time. And then you can rewrite it. And that's the kind of condition which you need on the volume so that you can have an accelerated expansion even if you cannot define the proper time. So now the question is, I had the equations, the modified Friedmann equation I showed you before. Can I have such a condition? What does it mean? So if you go to plug it with the relations I gave you before, the modified Friedmann equation, you will see that this is the condition that you have to satisfy if you want an early era of accelerated expansion, which means that there is a region, either for positive energy, GFT energy, or for negative energy, for which you have accelerated expansion, this part or this part. So there is an early era for which accelerated expansion can be satisfied. But then, of course, the next question you will be, this accelerated expansion, does it last long enough? If you go to calculate that, you will find that for any parameters you can want, the number of e-folds are below one. Which means, the lesson I get out from that, if I get modified Friedmann equations from GFT, and I forget about the interactions, which means I don't glue the things with each other, this model that you are going to get is not a viable kind of alternative to standard inflation.
A little bit confused because in the beginning you had the GFT and now it's just
It's GFT here, but this is the standard relation for accelerated expansion in FLRW with proper time. It is rewritten into that form in the absence of proper time. So this is the derivative of it with respect to this clock phi, if you wish. Now I plug the equations I have, which I gave them before. So I use these equations that I told you before, okay? And the condition that I get for accelerated expansion is this one here. This condition, which is the corresponding of that, becomes that.
Yeah, so what are various things here from GFT perspective? Rho is not the GFT rho, it's something else now, or is it GFT rho?
Which rho you're talking
the
about?
The positive there?
This is the rho that I got from the modulus of the condensate path.
GFT, right?
Yes.
Because in the previous class, it's the rho of energy density for the inflation case.
You are absolutely right.
Sorry.
This transparency here, yeah. You might as well not confuse it. This rho, write it with epsilon, the energy density.
Okay.
I'm sorry for that, you're right. No. This is the standard rho of the scalar field, it has nothing to do with the rho of the GFT. Okay.
So the next class is going to say all the symbols
in GFT. Is a GFT.
And what does M and M don't
have? M is related to the GFT. It's a parameter of the GFT, which you can...
One of the couplings.
It appears here. Okay. Expressed terms of the coefficient of the GFT theory. So it is a parameter of the theory. So as a matter of fact, that's why I said that whichever values you want to get, even for whichever value of E energy or the Q, the two constants of energy I have, or if you want this parameter M, no matter what you pick up from these parameters, you will never achieve an N that makes sense. So, a generic statement I can say, for this GFT model that we are using, the SU2, the tetrahedra, the whatever, the complex Hellefield and all that, if I don't make this quantum of space to speak to each other, then I can get a bounce, but the early era of accelerated expansion is ridiculously small. So, I mean, limited. So this is not a viable alternative to standard inflation. So let me now turn on the interactions. Okay? So the idea is the bound solution is going to survive if I turn on the interaction, first question. And the second one, what can I say for inflation, okay? So what kind of interaction I will take? So this is the interaction we take. And we consider, actually, that was basically with Andreas and Mark, a purely phenomenological approach. So I'm going to put constraints on the parameters so that I can have the inflation I want. If now, so then I can go to my friend here, Stefan, and say, here is the parameters that we want. Is it consistent with the full theory? So if you have in mind spin form models, then you might want to have interaction of powers of five. If you have in mind tensor model, you might have a motivation to consider even powers. But from my point of view, I don't care where they come from. I just want to put constraints, and then I want to see if there is a consistency between that and the GFT theory.
So this power five is related to the fact of using tetrahedra.
Yes, look, I don't care, as I said, where it comes from. You always ask me that. I don't mind. So you might, for me, might be not motivation, non-motivational. For me, it's phenomenological. I give support from the work of all of you, spin form. If you don't like it, just delete it.
Okay.
I don't care. It's phenomenological approach.
Okay, delete it then.
That's against your models, because I can give you some confirmation of that. If you don't buy it, that's okay. Anyway, so for me, that's a motivation. But as I said, I don't take that seriously, all these things, in order to confirm what I find, but it's a motivation for me. So let's see what of all these things is correct, okay? So here again is the action that I told you. Here is the potential that we take. Here is the equation written in terms of the modulus and the phase. Here are the various definitions. Here are the conserved quantities. Now, you can easily see that the equation that we have here, okay, with this definition, I mean, just for completeness, I wrote them down, but they might be too much in this transparency. You can show that is nothing else than the equation of motion of a classical point particle with this kind of potential, which I draw there. And if you go to make the drawing of the phase space, then you see that the orbits are all periodic, closed orbits, for a given value of this GFT energy that you have, which actually tells you that if you take the interactions into account, then you do find the bounds, but you find a cycling kind of universe. So the robustness of the bounds is there, and in addition, this interaction, it leads to a kind of recollapse and expansion, so you have a cyclic kind of cosmology. And here, for one value of this GFT energy, I make this plot. So what can we say now for inflation? So now we go to calculate what is the number of e-faults that we're going to have. And we find that you can have as many e-faults as you wish, provided you are into this kind of a regime for the selection of these interaction terms. So for me, this is important, because I can say that I can find the bounds, and I can give a prescription to a model builder from GFT. I look my friend Stefan, that the way that you have to glue these things, if you want at the end of the day to get the model you want, is that. And now, then I go to turn to my friend Francesca, say, could you cook me a model like that from your spin form models or whatever? So that's the idea. So phenomenologically, I give some support for these choices. But I cannot tell you if these are really justified from the full quantum gravity kind of theory. So the moral of all that, and this is the first part of this discussion, is that we have been playing with group field theory approach to quantum gravity. This is the approach that tells you that actually geometry and your space-time are emergent phenomena. They come when you take the semi-classical limit. And we have found that the initial singularity is replaced by a bounce. The existence of the bounce is robust when interaction are taken into account. And also, depending on the type of interactions you have, then you might get as many e-faults as you wish. Now, I'm going to turn on to something else.
You talk about cyclic universe, but in this construction, is somewhere topology of space built in by that kind or something? They can be. So it's indeterminate.
Is what, excuse me?
It's not determined what the topology is.
No, the topology is fixed. It's from this, loosely speaking. But I don't think that tells you anything for the topology that.
Right. So, but this will, so, but how would I interpret it? Do I interpret this universe at large values of phi to be a k equal to 0, k equal to 1, or what do I interpret this? From the Friedman equation.
In fact, the Friedman equation is always for flat universe.
It's for flat.
Flat.
Yes.
So this is cyclic.
Encoding spatial
curvature. No,
and for flat.
Yes.
And not as well.
No. And actually here I might say that in the first day we saw this list of questions. What is the prediction from here and so on? I don't know. If you ask personally, I don't think that, I, at least myself, I'm in a position to give any more concrete than that, in the sense that in order to do perturbation theory, which I found it a very delicate kind of issue, we should probably understand what is the metric here. And we don't, we have to construct the metric in order to see what the fluctuations are. So I cannot tell you to which extent I can get some kind of observable that can be tested. At least that's my personal view. Yes?
There is some confusion. So there is the bounce, then the universe becomes classical, then it collapses. Mm-hmm. But I thought that these interactions should be something important only, for instance, in the deep quantum regime. So if you go to the late universe, I don't expect them to contribute and therefore. So I understand that the collapse is something that comes from these interactions.
From the interaction, I can see.
But at the same time, this shouldn't be there. Am I right?
At late time, you would probably expect not to be there. So probably this all happens at early stages.
But then you have this is more like an oscillation in
this
the universe.
It's an oscillation. Yes, yes. That's how I could see it. So that I could see it, like even if you want increasing the entropy of the universe and things like that, if it goes too soon. There is an analogy probably with the string gas kind of picture in that sense.
But you had a notion of density, right? Epsilon. Therefore, we can just see what that epsilon is at the recollapse, and is it Francesca's? I mean, it must be in the early part, because you tell us that in the late times.
At the late time, this is died. You would expect at the late time, you want semi-classically to get the universe we live. So you would. This term would not be.
Do you have an effective parameterization also of this late time regime in terms of the Friedman equation, like you showed us for the bounds?
No.
Because then you.
No,
you
for the late time, I don't have.
You can interpret these as some kind of effective energy density.
Yeah, we don't.
Come from, they look like curvature or cosmological constant or something else.
No, I wouldn't go to that guesses, I think.
Right. So here's a picture again, but just ask. Here's a picture that there are these oscillations in the early time near the bounds. But then, as time passes on, then
they're going to die out because these stems are not going to become dominant, and then you would expect, because if you remember, all that was coming 1 over V to the biggest power. So once V is small, these are important. Once V is big, then you go to the standard massless scalar field of FLRW.
So I would
write
cyclic, I don't know. Just because it's not kind of.
Okay, I see what you mean. Because you say for cyclic is big bang, big crunch. Okay, right. Okay, very enough, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of organize in my mind what you actually did. So what you actually, you're assuming some sort of homogeneous field, which is sigma and rho, I guess. And you have a time-like parameter, this phi.
Yes.
And you write down the Lagrangian and so on. Somewhere, this is what I did, you showed it, but I missed it. Somewhere you get geometrical variable, specifically V, which represents,
yes,
if I understood,
yes,
spatial volume.
Yes, for
so
me.
How can you review, how did the V come out of those other variables?
You've got this dodecahedron.
No, but I mean, just mathematically,
yeah, so
what's the relation between the capital V and this phi, rho, and sigma?
There was an equation on the previous slide, but essentially, so if you're in the case where you only have one spin, which is the one that you consider, it's essentially rho squared.
V is rho
here
squared.
It is.
Times the fundamental V.
Here it is.
Yeah.
It's a fundamental V times rho squared. Actually, it's the sum of all the V, but given that one is the important contribution, as I said, I throw the sum and this V was. With the rho is the rho we said before, the modulus of the
I see. So the interpretation of this field.
Which field now?
sigma, or what do you call it?
It's the it's my condensate.
Your condensate. What name you have for this condensate? I don't remember.
Sigma.
Sigma. Okay. So part of it, it has a geometrical meaning. Namely, it's
part
modulus.
Of it,
it has a geometrical meaning in the sense that its modulus is the square root of the spatial volume of the cosmos. Is that right?
Yeah, if you want to see
like
that, yes.
But whenever you have a condensate, you can think of the modulus in some sense as a square root of density. You have this representation.
But it's written like that. Now I'm not going to go back in the
yes.
It was.
So rho squared is simply the number of particles in the condensate. And then you have the relation that basically the total volume is the number of particles times the volume. That's all that's happening.
So now if I see that I'm out of my time, but I wanted to talk about something else if possible. Yes.
Of course, you have 10 minutes. But just one question, which I'm interested in hearing the answer to. In this kind of cyclic scenario, you have a recollapse. But presumably, you have a choice of sign for the interactions, right? You can also imagine perhaps an opposite sign in which the interactions lead to an accelerated expansion. Does that make sense? Is there an opposite scenario there?
We did not check that case,
but
no.
We choose this potential
mm-hmm.
in a way so that, for example, this g of t path integral is bounded from below. We did it because we thought, okay, the g of t path integral is supposed to be a probabilistic expression.
There is an ambiguity in the choice of the sign, but there is a kind of condition. For you know, to be bounded from below that selects this value. Okay, so now if I can change gears, I'm going to talk about something that I have not been working myself, but I find very interesting and I would like to highlight it here, which is a possibility to get a bound universe and accelerated expansion from non-commutative field theory, in the sense that you are going to get from, which exactly as I said before, I've been working non-commutative spectral geometry, which is not the field theory, but from non-commutative field theory you can get an emergent gravity on non-commutative spaces, and it has been shown. It is emergent in the sense that actually the metric and the geometry, they are not fundamental degrees of freedom, but they come at the solution of your model, and then you can find like that there is an FLRW kind of solution, and that this solution gives modifications to a Friedman equation that can lead to accelerated expansion as well as to a bouncing universe. So I found it a pretty interesting idea. So the whole approach here is to try and construct a theory of quantum theory of your spacetime from the non-commutative algebra of your spacetime coordinates. So if you take the standard R4 that we know as our classical spacetime, then you are going to replace these coordinates by this kind of functions, x mu, which they obey this Heisenberg type of commutation relations. And at the semi-classical level, this kind of Heisenberg-like commutation relations become just the Poisson structure. And then the space-time, it is obtained from the quantization of such a manifold. Now, this theory has been studied in particular by Steinacker and his collaborators, and what they have found is that this approach leads to a non-commutative quantum field theory, which incorporates quantum fluctuations of your space-time coordinates, and therefore it has been argued that this theory, this kind of fluctuation, they can be related to gravity. So the whole approach is called emergent non-commutative gravity for the reason that I told you before, that geometry and space-time are not fundamental degrees of freedom. And actually, the way that you write it comes from 2B superstring theory. Because you start with a kind of Young-Mill types of matrix models. Here I have written it with a term which includes fermions, but this is not necessary. And this capital X is nothing else than your Hermitian matrices, which are the quantized version of the coordinate space-time. Now, and eta mu nu is nothing else than your background kind of metric. Now, it has been shown that this is nothing else than the low-energy effective limit of deep brains, which can be described by these non-commuting matrix-valued coordinate fields, x mu. So when you go to write the global minimum of the theory, that's what you get, which means that if you take the ground state, then all of these Hermitian matrices, x mu, are going to be simultaneously diagonalized, which implies that once you are in the tree level, you get the ordinary spacetime. And if you take this ground state, if you go to take perturbations, fluctuations, then you can find a new spacetime, and the coordinates of this new spacetime are described by these non-commutative matrices. And what is this theta parameter that I wrote before, which is the standard theta parameter of non-commutative geometry, is nothing else in the string theory kind of 2B string theory approach than the inverse of the Neve-Schwarz two-form field. So there is a relation between that. And therefore, it has been shown that if you take the dimensionality to be equal to 10, then you can prove that there is a solution of that theory, which is nothing else than a 3 plus 1 non-commutative brain that can be seen like the space-time we live embedded in a 10-dimensional background. And this can be seen by splitting these Hermitian matrices into these two parts, where this is just the embedding, okay? And this embedding is going to have this, to follow, to obey the Poisson structure that I said before. So then, if you go to take the U1, for instance, perturbations in this background, you find the graviton field. If you take the SUN perturbations, then you are going to find the non-abelian gates fields, which means that all the physical fields that you are going to get, you get them from the fluctuations around this background, and they live on the brain itself. And therefore, it's not like in string theory with extra dimensions that you have these degrees of freedom to be in the bulk. So this is the difference that you have there.
And the U1 gauge symmetry?
Yes.
You get that too?
You get that too. It has been shown. I mean, I can show you the...
I'm sorry, it's a bit of rotation. So.
So I just want, I just say that this kind of non-commutative approach, field theory approach, it has been originated from 2B string theory, and therefore it's going to be, and you can show that there is a 3 plus 1 metric, a solution of that theory.
That's what's confusing, because each x is an infinite dimensional operator, right?
Yes.
It's an operator in infinite dimensional Hilbert space. So this x here is going to be
I fix the dimensional to be equal to 10, okay? And I split that into two parts.
Right.
And this is the embedding of the 3 plus 1 space in the two-dimensional bulk.
Three dimensional is this operator in three-dimensional space, right? So in what sense am I getting each x, as I understand it from above,
yes,
is a Hermitian operator in three-dimensional Hilbert space.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a real number.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting... x1, for example, like mu equal to 1, I'm
yes.
going to get an operator on an infinite dimensional Hilbert space. In what sense is that space-time?
I didn't say that this is space-time.
Okay, so what
I didn't say
it?
The space-time. What I'm saying now is that it has been shown, and I tell you under which conditions, that you can find a metric which is an FLRW solution of that model. That's all I say. So that's why it was claimed that this is emergent quantum gravity model, because the geometry and the metric are not put by hand as a, you know, as a fundamental quantity.
If you can just explain this little symbol, which is big X mu is...
I split in order to see that it is an embedding of 3 plus 1 brain into a 4-dimensional kind of 10-dimensional bulk.
No.
So there are, you know, this I split into two parts. This is my brain,
but
which
that
has...
But is the same as the top X or not?
Yes, but I have fixed what is going to be the dimensionality of that.
But that dimensionality is just a little a in X, right?
That dimensionality leads
it's
to...
It's the number of Hermitian operators.
Mm-hmm.
Each one is a Hermitian operator.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So why is a Hermitian operator essentially the same as a number, X mu, little X mu? Why is... Big X mu.
But it's not, I don't see that. Can we discuss that later? Because this is not a number. So anyway, let me continue with that, and then we can see this point. So then it has been written down, has been shown, what is the effective metric that you are going to get for the scalar, the gauge, the fermionic degrees of freedom. Well, this is it's a kind of dynamical metric. In other words, this metric is not fundamental because it depends on both theta, which is the Poisson structure, as well as the embedding, because it depends on this phi. And then what you are doing is you are going to find the equation of motion, which in covariant form is written like that, okay? And you are going to look for a solution which is an FLRW kind of background. And you can find that you need some kind of embedding in order to get the FLRW solution that you want. And it has been shown that this embedding is nothing else than this minimal embedding that you are going to have. So the induced metric is the dynamical metric. So you are looking for a solution which describes an FLRW background. And this solution is going to be giving you a modified Friedmann equation, which is taking this form. This is the Friedmann, this is the acceleration equations with B and M constants. And then you can go and study which is the phenomenology of these equations with K, the special curvature. So for instance, you can immediately see that at the early universe, which means that small a, you are going to have inflation. For late times, this kind of accelerated expansion finishes. And it has been calculated the age of the universe for the case of k equal to 0, k equal to plus 1. And the result was that you are going to have that the universe is younger. The Hubble parameter is much smaller than what you would expect. And therefore, you consider only negative curvature. So that's, I put a plus 1 now. So this is going to lead to a kind of early bounce, and the bounce get a minimum value for the scale factor. And when you go to see as well the behavior of the scale factor at small values of A, you find that there is a power law kind of expansion, and there is a graceful exit as well. So it gives a bouncing solution, it gives accelerated expansion, and it gives a graceful exit. Here you can see. Sorry? That deflation stops at some point. The deflation does not continue forever.
Okay.
So here, for instance, you can see how the scale factor behaves with respect to time for some choice of the parameters. And here you can see the Hubble parameter, how it behaves with time. So the conclusion of that was that there is a model which is completely disconnected from what we said before, we discussed the previous days, where you have an emergent gravity motivated by 2B string theory, which can give you a bounce. It can give you inflation with inflation arriving at an end. And the universe that you get after inflation, it seems to be of the Milner type. So then, for me, and that's one of the things that we said at the beginning, but we never really discussed a lot, is I was wondering what these models they have in common. Because I gave you an example at the beginning from all these categories. We've seen them from the string gas scenario, we've seen them from LQC, we've seen them from GFT, you see it from something here which is completely different. And I was wondering what do they have in common so that all of them, apart that they have some kind of effective equation from these corrections that you get from these different quantum gravity approaches, they seem generically to give you a bounce and an early era of accelerated expansion. And of course, it's an important question to find out whether if you are in the full quantum gravity regime, whether these results still hold. Because in each of these cases, there are quite some truncations and assumptions that can be made we took the semi-classical limit for all these things. So I don't know if people have a kind of something to suggest about what do they have in common. What I can find in common in all of these things is a kind of minimum length area. Because even in non-commutative geometry, we have the same thing. In LQC, we have it. In GFT, we have it. In all these approaches, there is some kind of minimum area, minimum length, that's the common thing they have. I can understand the bounds for that, in a very loose way. But I cannot understand the accelerated expansion. So that's
how. Well, accelerated expansion just must be there in these amounts, right? I mean, how long it lasts is not clear. But just because A goes from a scale factor will go from, A dot will go from contracting branch, which is negative, to positive. And so at the bounds, and A dot is equal to zero at the bounds, so to go to positive, A double dot must be.
Yeah, but this is the initial kick.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, so I can see that as the, but why inflation? That expands, fine, but that expands in accelerated thing.
No, but that A double dot must be positive at the bounds, just because A dot goes from negative
right.
to positive.
But,
and therefore, in the neighborhood of the bounds in the future, it must be also positive, because positive somewhere that can go to zero slowly. And of course, we don't know how long.
But this could be exactly very small, very short, as I saw before.
Be very small. So that will depend on the detail of the model.
So it seems to be that there is, I mean, from what I try to show here, it seems to be that there could be a geometric ingredient that can make this
loss. Sufficiently long.
So that's what it seems to be.
I have a couple of questions. First, just on the notation, you had a small x and a big x. I didn't understand what
one is the quantum of the other. You quantize and you go from the x mu, which is the coordinate, to this Hermitian matrices. That's it. It's a semi-classical quantization.
It's sort of semi-classical.
Yeah, if you wish. Yes, yes,
like
yes,
that.
Yes, 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 yes. That's the notation.
And
I think that's why I put it as a tilde, because you take the semi-classical.
Well, I didn't see the tilde. But there's just four of them. Is that just? It's x mu, small x mu,
I mean, I if
x.
you try to find the solution which represents your 3 plus 1 brain in a bigger bulk. So then you constrain it. The total d becomes 10, and then the mu becomes 1 to 3, I mean, 0 to 3, and the other.
Well, I have the problem. I still don't understand the relation between big x and small x. Is it like an expectation value? If so, then what is the state? It's not expected value.
No, there what I wrote there, it was just a schematic way of splitting it.
It's not Dieterle
formula. Dieterle formula, first of all, I don't have it. I don't know. So I cannot tell you. It's not my work, that, okay,
no,
as I say. So what I say is a schematic way in order to show how the one, I mean, how you can have this 3 plus 1 embedding into the four dimensions. So it's split it into two parts. That's the standard. So I don't know which equation you're.
No, that we understand. So you've got 10 objects and you're splitting into 4 plus 6.
Yeah.
That we understand.
Okay. So now what's your question?
But the 10 objects are operators.
Mm-hmm.
And in space time, they become small x, which are just already coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the relation between the four operators? You said infinity dimensional Hilbert space. So four operators on infinity dimensional Hilbert space with the four numbers little x mu. The relation between capital X mu, which are operators on infinity dimensional Hilbert space, and little x mu, which are just four numbers.
The small numbers is the classical part. I just
basically the non-commutative part.
What?
Basically is given by some theta, right? Non-commutative parameter. And in the limit where that goes to zero, is where you recover the commutative geometry. And I suppose that that's the limit in which one would be interested.
You could get four commuting Hermitian operators on infinity dimensional.
Right, but then that's.
But they're still operators, they're not four numbers. So there's something, conceptually something is being assumed that we're just missing. I'm just missing.
Maybe someone understands matrix model better, but just to muddy the waters even more. I'm not even sure that x zero, for example, is an operator. It's a whole matrix, right? So I think maybe each matrix element of it is an operator. is that right?
No, this doesn't make.
But let me finish the second. This will not. The second question is more directly physical. So you had this inflation without an inflaton or something like that.
I had inflation without a scalar field.
Without
yes.
A fundamental, without ad hoc scalar field.
Yes.
But is there an emergent scalar field that plays
no,
a role?
I have I have an accelerated expansion from the geometry. I mean,
okay, so, so then again, someone else who understands inflation better than I do can comment. But I thought you need something like an inflaton.
No, you don't.
Not in order to cause the exponential expansion, but in order to convert the fluctuations.
I didn't speak. Remember, I said I don't talk about perturbation theory at all. I don't know. What I said here, when I said deflation, I was very careful. I said exponential expansion. I didn't talk at all about perturbation theory. So I cannot tell you what can be the cause of the structure formation. That's another thing that I didn't touch here. But could be that I have extra matter fields, or like the, you know, whatever. It could be curvaton, could be scale. I didn't talk, I don't know. I remember I made another comment and I said that I want first to be able to recover the metric to be able to write before I go to talk about perturbation.
Well, right. I remember the comment. I thought it was in connection with the first model, but you make the same comment for the second model.
Whatever I said had to do with an early era of accelerated expansion.
Okay, but is it a fair statement that there still might be an ingredient missing? If you want the inflation to do what it normally does for you, sort of the thing that it does most for you, I think, is provide these primordial density fluctuations.
Certainly,
and
but...
So here, if we don't have an effective or fundamental inflation,
look,
we have to ask, or maybe it's an f of r theory and there's a hidden scalar field, I don't know, but
no,
there's some ingredient...
No, first of all, since I have not studied the perturbation in the context of that theory, I don't know if there is something else that can be, you know, the initial thing that through gravitational stability becomes bigger. So I don't know. It might be that there are corrections that can play the role of the inflaton for structure formation. It might be that you need to put an inflaton by hand. I have no comment on that. I really don't know. But I agree with you that that's probably one, is the only biggest success of inflation, and I cannot address it, but.
Yeah, we're running a bit late, so maybe
sorry
we
for
should
that.
Stop here. Thank you, Mary.